Welcome to the American Magazine Podcast. I'm joined by Luke Hansen, who's a Jesuit scholastic and associate editor here at America. Welcome, Luke.
Good to be here. Thank you, Tim.
Now, Luke, you're here to talk about a kind of unusual trip you just took down to Guantanamo Bay in Cuba. Maybe you can let our listeners know how this came about.
Well, right now, there are five defendants on trial for participating, helping plan the attacks that happened on September 11th, 2001, and they're being tried in military commissions. And those commissions are taking place at the naval base at Guantanamo Bay in Cuba. And before the trial happens, however, there need to be a series of pretrial hearings. So those hearings are going to be happening over the course of the next year. And they were going to broadcast these hearings on closed-circuit television at Fort Meade outside of Washington, D.C., so members of the public and members of the media could watch the trial at Fort Meade. So I inquired, because of some of my past work with a group called Witness Against Torture, and because America Magazine has written editorials on Guantanamo and has had a few articles over the years, I thought it might be important for us to have a presence at these hearings. So I inquired about going to Fort Meade to cover the pretrial hearings, and in the midst of that came this invitation to travel with the press corps to Cuba, which came as a surprise to me. But when I talked to our new editor-in-chief, Matt Malone, he thought, yeah, this is important, and this is a good idea, and America should have a presence there. So I was able to obtain the necessary security clearance through the Pentagon to travel with other members of the press corps to Cuba for a week of hearings.
When you got there, I mean, what did it look like? I mean, for a lot of our listeners, this place is kind of shrouded in mystery. What was it like?
Well, the first thing that was evident as we were landing is that it's a very beautiful tropical place. So I could see mountains in the background and pretty lush green hills. And it's a big naval base. So we actually flew into one side of the naval base and then had to jump onto a ferry to take it to... we took the ferry to another part of the naval base where the courtroom complex is. Detention camps were in an entirely different part of the naval base. So it's an expansive piece of land. It was very hot and humid the week that we were there, even though it was mid-October. And we basically spent most of the week in one small part of the camp, which was home to the courthouse, a number of tents where members of the media and other people could stay, and then a media center. And we had a military escort with us the whole time as we moved from the tents to the courtroom to the media center. And we were not able to see other parts of the base for the most part while we were there.
Now, you blogged about your experience for us, so we will link to that on our website. But there was one element I was particularly interested in is the defense for Khalid Sheikh Mohammed. Maybe you could talk about the officer who defended him and some of the arguments he was making.
Well, there was a wide range of what was talked about during the week. They were hoping to hear about 25 motions during the course of the week, and they got through about half of them. And the motions ranged from anything from what the defendants were allowed to wear in court, which was an issue with Khalid Sheikh Mohammed because he made a request to wear camouflage. Because he wanted to communicate his status and his view as a privileged belligerent, as a legitimate fighter in a war. So that was on one end of the spectrum. On the other end of the spectrum, the attorneys were arguing big constitutional questions. In what ways does the Constitution apply to this hearing? What is the relationship of classified information to this hearing? What can the public know? What can the public not know? So there was a wide range of issues that were dealt with during the course of the week. And my experience was that the defense attorneys were zealous advocates for the men who are being who are on trial right now. And they were arguing passionately, not only for some of the smaller things about presence in court and what defendants could wear, but they were also raising larger questions about the military commissions, whether they were legal, whether they were constitutional, whether they had simply been constructed to obtain a conviction. So there was a big focus on whether this was actually a fair process or not for the defendants.
Well, that gets to the heart of what we've written about, is this process fair? So why weren't these defendants tried in federal court, for example?
Well, early on, after the 9/11 attacks, the Bush administration made a decision that when somebody would be arrested in connection with 9/11 or with connection to terrorism, that they would be tried in an alternative system of justice outside of the federal system, outside of the Uniform Code of Military Justice. And that was actually the reason why the prison ended up in Cuba in the first place, because the Bush administration made a deliberate attempt to hold terrorism suspects in a place that would be beyond the reach of the U.S. courts. Now, when President Obama came into office, he put a temporary hold on the military commission system so he could do his own assessment of whether he wanted to continue that system of trying terrorists. In the end, he made a decision to try these five men in federal court in New York City, very close to the place where the World Trade Centers came down. There was a lot of political backlash to that decision. Attorney General Eric Holder and President Obama revisited the decision to try these men in federal court, and in the end decided they will be tried in military commissions, somewhat consistent with the Bush administration's framework for trying these men. Now, that was a question I had throughout the week, is why am I in Cuba for this trial when in almost every case in the past, when somebody has committed a terrorist act against the United States, they've been prosecuted in federal court. So that's one of the lingering questions that definitely existed during the week, is why are we here and why did we have to create an alternative legal system to try these particular men?
Now, you also had a chance to talk with some of the families of victims of September 11th who were able to travel to Cuba for this trial. You wrote a piece in the magazine about some of their views on forgiveness in relation to what happened on that day. Maybe you could talk about a little more detail about your conversations with them.
There were nine family members of victims of the 9/11 attacks who were able to travel to Cuba to watch the hearings in the courtroom. And they had won a lottery through the Pentagon to be able to travel to Cuba. Spending time with them was a very important part of my whole experience there. Over the past few years, my approach to Guantanamo has generally been through the lens of human rights and the stories of detainees and U.S. detention policies. And so it was very informative for me to spend time with the victims' families and to hear about this whole process from their perspective. And one place where I found convergence is that they're very frustrated by how long it's taken to actually try these men. And the reason for that is because the Bush administration decided to try them outside of a normal legal framework, that framework has come under international criticism. That framework has been challenged in U.S. courts over the course of many years. That really kept this trial from happening much more quickly, and I think that's been very frustrating from the perspective of victims' families. And, you know, they had different ideas about where to place the blame for why this trial hasn't even happened yet, and it's 2012. Another thing that really struck me from spending time with them was how much hurt and rage they still feel over what had happened. There really was a consensus in the group that whatever the legal system, like, these men need to be brought to justice immediately. And for them, that means the death penalty. And this is a capital trial. So if these men are convicted, it's very likely that they will face the death penalty. And I had an opportunity to ask them about faith and forgiveness, and those were hard questions for these family members. It was hard to understand the role of forgiveness in light of such a heinous crime directed at innocent people and innocent loved ones from their perspective. So I've been thinking, since coming home, I've been thinking a lot about my time with the family members and its impact that it's had on me.
Could you describe any kind of interesting moments, notable moments, encounters from the week you were down there?
Yeah, there were a few. And some of the things that struck me were the moments when people involved in the commissions, defendants, family members, attorneys, members of the media, when people would sort of break through fear, division, the narrative of war that we live within. And yeah, there were moments when people were able to do that. A couple things stand out. When you're looking into the courtroom And an attorney, one of the defense attorneys, is arguing in front of the judge. It's interesting to watch, like, the reactions of the defendants to the case that the defense attorney is making. These men, insofar that they've identified with Al-Qaeda and identified with being at war against the United States, are watching Americans defend their human rights in a courtroom with a lot of passion, with a lot of zeal. I thought the defense attorneys were really impressive. They were bright. They were making very compelling cases on behalf of these men, not at all to justify things that these men have taken part in, but simply asserting their rights within a United States legal system. And it just made me wonder, like, I wonder what's going through Khalid Sheikh Mohammed's mind as he watches this zealous advocacy on his behalf by an American citizen, in some cases by military personnel who are on the defense team for the defendants. So yeah, there were moments, watching attorneys and defendants interact with each other, or watching defendants interact with military police who are monitoring the courtroom, where those interactions, it was very evident, were cooperative, courteous. They were exchanging pleasantries with each other, and it just became clear that, this narrative that we live within, that the United States and Al-Qaeda are at war with each other, and, one of these terrorists would injure or would kill an American at any opportunity they have, that just simply, these were human beings interacting with each other in a very personal and kind way, for the most part. That was one of the things I was able to witness being in the courtroom, and I was really struck by that.
So that's something you would not have seen from closed circuit TV.
Yeah, well, exactly. When you're watching on closed circuit television, they're giving you very selective camera angles. So you're either watching the judge talk, or you're watching the attorney make his argument, or the camera might, for just a moment, zoom in on one of the defendants. But you don't get to see the larger picture of people interacting with each other in the courtroom, especially when something else is going on elsewhere in the shot. So it was a privilege to be able to sit in the back of the courtroom. We were behind soundproof glass, but we could observe kind of what was happening and how people were interacting with each other.
Now, just from a technical perspective, where do things stand now with this trial? There were a lot of motions heard. Are they going to resume soon?
So the pretrial motions will resume the first week of December. And the plan is, the chief judge laid it out, is that they will hear motions for 1 week every other month until they exhaust that process and the trial can start. So there are different estimates of how long it's going to be until a trial begins. Somebody might say as early as 6 to 8 months from now. Some people would argue it's going to be 3 or 4 more years until a trial starts.
If it's going to be so long before the trial actually starts, and many media outlets will be reporting it on it until then, why should we continue to pay attention to what's going on down at Guantanamo?
I think it's very significant. The fact that in our immediate response to 9/11, we felt it was necessary to create an alternative legal system. We had legal systems that were in place to try terrorism suspects that have been very successful in the past, that have obtained convictions of terrorism suspects, that have held terrorism men convicted of terrorism accountable for their actions. We made a decision over a decade ago that we needed to create something new. I mean, that system has been a failure. It's been a failure in that only 7 men have been convicted in military commissions in the past decade. It's been a failure in that while I was in Cuba, a U.S. Court of Appeals overturned the terrorism conviction of a man who had been Hamdan, who had been convicted in a military commission, because we had charged him with a crime that did not exist at the time that he committed it. So there are lots of legal problems with the military commissions. And President Obama, and if Governor Romney is elected, they've chosen to continue this path. And I feel with the victims' families who are crying out for justice, and it just seems at this point that with the international scrutiny of the military commission systems and its consistent failure over the course of the past decade, that, you know, justice cannot be done in this system. So at every step of the way, it seems to me that Americans should be following this and interested and concerned that we continue to follow this path, even though it's doomed to failure. And who knows, perhaps with a new administration, there could be the possibility of revisiting the question of, like, what is the proper form for trying these men?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, President Obama said the first thing he was going to do in office, that's, you know, almost 4 years ago now, was close Guantanamo. Well, why has it taken so long, and is he still interested in doing that?
Yeah, very early on, and I think President Obama had a very strong position during his campaign about why Guantanamo was both unjust and moral, why it was a stain on our country's reputation. But pretty early on in his presidency, he encountered a lot of political opposition to his attempt to close it. And he made a decision that he didn't want to spend political capital on this particular issue because it wasn't a priority for him. So President Obama seemed to concede the point pretty early on in his administration. Perhaps in a second term, you know, this question will be revisited, and it could become a priority again. That's something we'll have to wait and see.
Just finally, pull back a bit, and this is an issue we've written about. Obviously, when you go down, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, these folks are actually accused of something and are standing trial for it. There are the people at Guantanamo, as we've written about, who right now are not accused of anything but still are there. Maybe you can talk about them.
Sure. Right now, the population at Guantanamo is 166 detainees, and more than half of them have been approved for release. Most of those men are from Yemen, but President Obama made a decision a couple years ago that we're not going to transfer any of the men to Yemen because of instability in that country. And he made that decision regardless of any of the individual circumstances of the detainees who are waiting to be transferred. The Obama administration did its own assessment of the detainees and what they've been accused of and what kind of evidence we have in each case. The Obama administration found that very few men at Guantanamo were actually being accused of plotting terrorist attacks against the United States. Most of the men there were either low-level fighters who had very sort of loose connections to terrorist groups, or they had no connection at all. And they were simply, they had been brought to Guantanamo, and now the United States has made this effort to find a country to resettle them in, but that's proven very difficult over the course of many years. So in fact, most of the men at Guantanamo over the course of its history and now have had a little or no connection to terrorist groups. We're simply trying to find a home for them. In the case of these five defendants who are on trial right now, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, the most well-known of them, he himself has bragged about having planned the 9/11 attacks. So these men, by their own statement, seem to have a much more substantive connection to terrorism and al-Qaeda than most of the men in Guantanamo have.
Well, Luke Hansen, we want to thank you for your reporting on this topic, and we will continue to look for you to write more about it for us.
Thank you, Tim.